College of Judaism.
And welcome.
Welcome to the power structure of the alphabet, the energy structure of the Hebrew letters. Before we begin, let's have a little understand what's going on, a little understanding of what's going on here. Are these letters really engaging in a conversation with God? That's the first question we have to ask. And let's understand what this all means. The letters coming before God and asking God, please create the world with me. Is there really a conversation going on? We're talking about God. God is the light force, and we're speaking about letters speaking, talking. How can letters speak to God? We're not dealing with two people engaged in a conversation. So what is it? It is nothing else but channels, cables for a light force. And each one transfers different kinds of vibrations, different kinds of signals for energy. And each channel attempts to channel the light in a better way with more intensity. So when we read that letters appear before God with a stronger request that I should be the one with which the world would be created, it means that it was the intensity of that channel that appeared and was revealed. But basically, that process of the letter appearing is nothing more than the process of creation. We're talking about the blueprint of the universe. We're not talking about letters, how they were created, how each one was chosen, and which ones were not chosen. That's legend. We're discussing here how the blueprint of this universe, how did we come about with all our consciousness, and how does everything work here? And what is the principle of life? That is, what do these letters represent? Because each letter represents the intensity of sharing the light, the intensity of restriction, the intensity of different kinds of consciousness to show us how the light works. And we already know that restriction is the principle that we've learned. But how does that principle work? How do I use restriction? In which way and in different situations? We need a practical use for it. And that's what the letters provide for us. They're telling us how the light is channeled in different ways, in 22 different energy levels, which create all the rest of the sublevels of energy that exists in the world. And that's what the request is all about, different levels of consciousness. When we speak about the different levels, the last week we discussed the letter Nun, if you remember, about falling. What kind of consciousness you need to prevent falling? How do you change the falling you experience within yourself? How do you change the feeling of depression, the feeling of being at the bottom of the pit that we sometimes experience? That's the kind of energy that comes from the light that helps me make the change I need to make in my life. And that's what it represents. And so what is its physical shape? The physical form is a kind of manifestation of that energy. Because you know, when you have vibrations, and we have the equipment today that can measure vibrations, and the machine which does the measuring has a screen, and the screen creates a physical form, right? What do you think a voice print is but a physical form of a sound vibration? And the same here. These letters produce a certain vibration, and its physical form is the physical manifestation of its energy vibrations. Got it? Now today, we're going to discuss the letter Mem. That's in front of you. You got the final mem, the other mem is the one on the other side, right? They're both mem. One is the final and one is the regular. And we're going to talk about the difference between the mem and all the different letters. And the Zohar tells us that all the letters, belong to one category. And the mem belongs to another category. Why is that so? What is so special about the mem? That's the question. And why is the mem the first letter of the Hebrew word for melech, which means king? M-E-L-E-C-H, melech, that means king. And why is it that in every blessing that we recite, the word melech is found? We say, Baruch, Ata, Malkeinu Melech, Melech Olam, King of the Universe. Do you think that if we did not affirm the fact that God is the King of the world, he would not feel like a king? Why do we say this? And if I don't say it, God's going to be angry? Another question. What is the significance of the fact that the Mem is the letter which begins the word Melech, king? Do you know that there's a special blessing that is recited when you see a king? You know what the blessing is? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, shenatan mikvodo lebasar vadam, who gave of his honor to flesh and blood. You mean to tell me that just because somebody decided that a certain person would become the king, that God agreed to give him that honor as a human being? Does that make sense? So if it doesn't make sense, then why is it that when you see the king, you're supposed to make that blessing? And one of the things that the Mem teaches is, and something that's very unique, and I think that's the goal of today's lecture, is that the Mem is connected to a completeness, a wholeness. It is connected to a quantum. What is this completeness? When are we complete? When is there quantum control? Does the number 40 have any connection with what we're talking about? Because the numerical value of Mem is 40. And how does the Mem teach us to accomplish unity? And another interesting thing is, how does the Mem provide us with the consciousness of looking straight at the cause of things and not to be under the influence of the effect of things? Because in life, you can lose money or have problems in your business, or you can lose your relationships, or your health becomes a major problem. But this is the cause of the problem. No. What's the cause? Can we see the cause with our eyes? And we already know that we can never see the cause of things with our eyes. The cause is always something spiritual. The reason that things occur to us is always something that cannot be visually seen. When you see what is happening, that is always the effect. So how do you arrive at the cause of things, and why do certain things happen? These are all questions we have to answer today. And also let us understand the difference between the Mem and all the other different letters that we've studied up until now. The Mem is the letter which creates balance in life. The Zohar tells us the Mem can help us to understand how we can achieve balance in our lives. And if we look at its structure, you'll notice that it is open on the bottom. See that? It's comprised of two letters, the Vav and the Chaf. The Vav, the Chaf, two letters. Those two letters add up to 26. Chaf and Vav is 26, which means a great deal to us already. 26 is the numerical value of the Tetragrammaton, the holy name of God. But we see that it's open on the bottom. And this shows us that there is an opening for the light. When do we get an opening for the light? How do we open a door so that the light may enter? One word, how? Restriction. Restriction creates balance. It creates central column. We're supposed to know this already. That's what creates balance. That's what allows the light to enter the vessel. That is what creates an opening. There's an opening, and so something can come in. The Mem is also the letter which falls exactly in the middle of the Hebrew alphabet. It's the middle letter. And you know, when we come to the middle of the Torah reading, or the portion, or the book of the Bible, or the middle of a sentence, we're supposed to stop. Why? What does being in the middle mean? It means that this is the point where we can combine right column and left column. We can combine light and vessel. So we stop at this point to meditate, because this is the place where you can accomplish more openings in your life. an opening for more positivity, an opening for more joy, an opening for more happiness, and that's why we stop at these places. And the mem also falls, as I said, in the middle of the word, emet. Remember in the beginning, the first lecture on the letter taf, we said we should create the world with the letter, with the energy intelligence of truth, emet. And it's aleph, mem, taf. Aleph is the first letter of the alphabet, mem is the middle letter of the alphabet, taf is the last letter of the alphabet. The truth represents everything from A to Z. And we already studied that the word truth represents really going with the light. If I live with my consciousness only, I will never see the truth. I will never see the real thing. I will always be in some sort of an illusion. The truth will only appear if I allow the light to enter. And so the mem, the letter mem being in the middle of the word emet, truth, also shows us that there are two other letters, an aleph and a tav, which comprise the word. And the aleph is the first letter of the alphabet and the taf is the last letter of the alphabet. And so therefore the word represents completeness, the wholeness of right, left, and central column. So truth is that which brings completeness, and that letter which balances out this totality of wholeness is the letter mem. And so we see here in a very literal way how the letter mem brings balance to the world. Okay? But what does all this have to do with my practical life? How do I bring balance to my life? Well, first we should know that lying distorts the balance. You see, why do people lie? Because we're looking for the convenient way out of a situation. That's what we think. But the truth is that if people lie, they create a blockage for their opportunity to correct themselves. A person who lies will never be able to correct himself or grow spiritually. You know why? Because this is the time when we can use all of our consciousness, all of our knowledge, and it might be inconvenient for us, and you might suffer because you told the truth, but that's the place which separates the men from the boys. The question revolves around the point of whether you're willing to accept the inconvenience. Are you willing to go through the restriction? And if you're not willing, then you can never grow spiritually and you'll never change. And therefore you can create a blockage within yourself, and you should know that you're not hurting anyone but yourself. That's why the Torah tells us not to lie. Don't lie. You think the Torah's purpose is to tell us what to do and what not to do? That's really not the purpose. The Torah is telling us that if you lie, you're not going to make it spiritually. That's all. So when you're willing to struggle with the inconvenience and you're willing to suffer for the things you do, then you should know that eventually you're going to get those things that you desire. But in the meantime, it's not going to be easy. And because you want to be in the light and because you want to connect to the wholeness and you trust in the light and not in your wisdom that creates an illusion, then in the end you're going to get all the benefit, more than you ever expected. So how does the mem give us that special unique consciousness of balance? You can only achieve balance when you see the total picture. If you can see the total picture, then you're in balance. But you see, most of us are always influenced by our ego. We're influenced by our smartness. And when this happens, we see only part of the picture and not the total picture. And when I see only part of the picture, I lose my balance. And I'm never going to be able to know what is really going on because I'm never going to be in balance with the situation. The only time I can see the whole picture is when I'm in balance. If I allow the ego to enter into anything, I am immediately off balance. And at that moment, we focus into details and not the total picture. So the mem teaches us how to see the whole picture. And the mem also represents quantum control because everything is one. Everything is one. Even though everybody sees things differently, nevertheless, in the final analysis, everything is one. But if the situation arises when someone does something to me that's against my interest, I concentrate then only on what I see and I miss the point. But if I can see that this inconvenience only came around to help me in life, to change who I am, to help me to grow, then it only came about for my benefit, then I see the whole picture. Balance comes in only one way. If you want to achieve balance, you have to let go. You have to let it go. Give it up. And when I let it go, I don't pursue the situation. I don't persist. And so if so, and the other person wins, and now he's in control, and I say, what about me? You know, I'm right, and you want me to give up, and I give up, and now I'm suffering because I didn't fight. I'm fighting for the truth. How can I give up? You should know that that's the illusion. It's the illusion that Satan provides for us. Because when we are fighting, we're thinking of who? We're thinking, I'm right. You're looking at the situation only from one perspective. And that's not the whole picture. So even when I believe that it is very hard for me to give up because it's not only me who's involved, but everybody will benefit if I fight, even then, at times, it's an illusion. Because deep inside, you know very well why you're not willing to let go. And that's because these are your principles, right? These are the way you see things. You understand, this is an important consciousness that the Mem is giving us. It's giving us balance. And we'll never achieve that balance unless we're able to let go. To give up at times and see the whole picture. Sometimes you just can't change other people. At times you have to keep yourself in balance. Sometimes even when you're right, you have to give up. Because if you're always fighting and never giving up for that which you think is right, on your grave there will be inscribed the words, "Here lies the person who was always right." Sometimes being right all the time, being right all the time can kill you. And so the letter Mem is also the first letter of the Hebrew word ma'atzil, emanator. Emanator is cause. The Mem helps us to get to the cause of things. It helps us to be in control because it has light and it has vessel. It includes everything. The Mem teaches us that when you are the cause of things, you will determine everything. The Mem teaches you how to be a winner in every situation. So if I can really let go of everything and let the light do its thing, it might look as if I'm lost, but in reality, I won it all. Whatever it is I thought I lost is going to come back. The money will return, the respect will return, the peace will come, it will all return because it belongs to you. The word Mashiach also starts with a Mem. So what does the Mashiach have to do with all this? What is Mashiach? It is total completeness. It's when all the light will be revealed. It is the totality of the light. It is the totality of unity. And so you can sing, Mashiach, 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 as some people say, and you can put up posters all over the place saying, we want Mashiach now, and we can say, King Mashiach lives. In Florida, they have these posters, but if you're not in unity, if you practice causeless hatred, it's a fake. It's a waste of time. The Mashiach's not here. And we can all say this one is Mashiach and that one is Mashiach, but the truth is that Mashiach is the power of unity. Mashiach is a matter of unity between people. You see those people who are saying they want to bring Mashiach, they're not speaking about unity. They're speaking about separation, fragmentation. They're speaking about division. We must always remember that when we're talking about Mashiach in the true sense of the term, we're talking about all being in unity with each other. It makes no difference who these people are if there's no unity. Because if there's no unity, there's no Mashiach. That's what I try to tell my Chabad friends. And that's what we should understand. In Kabbalah, people from all cultures and nationalities and religions can sit together and be united. That's what Mashiach is. So the Kohen, the priest in Judaism, is also related in some manner to the Mem. How so? The Mem is the letter for water. Mayim is water. The letter that created water is the Mem. What does that mean? It means that the Kohen, who has the power of chesed, loving kindness, sharing, and that's the same power and same energy of water. Water shares. You drop it, it shares. It spreads out. And we also are aware that chesed means sharing. Chesed means to expand out, to think about others instead of just thinking about myself. That's what the Kohen, the priest, was supposed to do. The Kohen was a healer. Why was the Kohen a healer? Why wasn't Moses the healer? Couldn't Moses be a healer? Why wasn't he the healer? The Torah tells us that when a person had a disease, they would not call Moses, they would call the priest to diagnose the case. You mean to tell me that the Kohen was a skin doctor or a heart surgeon? Why give him that power? Why him and not Moses? Moses was the greatest prophet we ever had, quote unquote. We speak about unity. We speak about balance. How can we achieve balance in life? What the Torah is trying to impress upon us is that the Kohen was the one who understood balance and unity. That was the power of the Kohen. Aaron, the high priest, was the one who was able to unite wife and husband. How do you put two people together? By letting go of ego and trying to view the other person's situation. That's the only way to achieve unity. The Kohen was the person who was able to do this. And this did not apply between a husband and a wife, but between friends and brothers and acquaintances and between family. You know what happens when someone dies? There's a whole fight between the family as to who is going to inherit what. There results the greatest hatred in these times. It was the Kohen who knew how to bring these people together because his essence was the power of unity. Aaron came to Chesed from a lower level. He started off at Hod all the way down and rose to Chesed, and he was able to accomplish this feat only because he created that unity, that balance in life. The Zohar says that the Mem is Chesed of Ze'ir Anpin. What does that mean? We know that Ze'ir Anpin is that Sphira that combines the upper world and the lower world. There are six Sphirot in Ze'ir Anpin. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yesod. That's Ze'ir Anpin. And one of them is Chesed, the first one. And Chesed is one aspect of unity. And that's why it says in the creation of the universe that God created the heaven and earth. And it says what after they created the first section? What did it say? It was evening and it was morning. What? What? Anybody know? Huh? Not first day. That's the point. It was day one. Doesn't say first day. It says day one. And all the other days says second day, third day, fourth day, fifth day, sixth day. Why doesn't it say first day? But it had to say one. Because this indicates to us the oneness that exists in day one. It is the power of unity that is included in all the other days. All the energy is there. It's the seed. And that's the power of Sunday. It's more powerful than all other days on one level. And we should also be aware of the fact that Chesed has the numerical value of 72. So the power of the 72 names of God is somehow related to the aspect of Chesed, to the aspect of sharing. And perhaps that is also the reason why Moses used this combination of the 72 names, according to Kabbalah, to split the Red Sea. It's water, to create the power of water. Perhaps that's the power of water. I don't know. But Abraham, we're told in the Bible, is a channel for Chesed. And we know this is so because he was a channel for sharing. His house was open on all sides and all directions. He was the epitome of hospitality. If you add up the numerical value of Abraham, it adds up to 248. And this relates to many things. It relates to the number of organs that we have in the body. It relates to the positive mitzvot in the Torah. So Abraham also represents that aspect of unity, that aspect of chesed, and that's the power of the number 248. It is wholeness. It is the complete structure of all the organs in the human body. And so the moment I have that chesed, the moment that I'm influenced by that chesed through the aspect of sharing, as the moment I have that, I can let go. And then I can look out at another person with an extension so that I can appreciate his point of view. Then I can be a little more sensitive about others. And at that moment, I'll be more connected to the light because that is the nature of the light. Because when we yell and holler and scream, nobody's influenced. And we all do make, all we try to do, you know, we all do this, we try to make a point. But look at Moshe. Moses, he had a fight with Korach. And Korach was not just rebellious. He was able to persuade the children of Israel to believe that Moses didn't know what he was doing. Moses knew that he was right. He knew that Aaron was the correct person to be the channel of Chesed. There was no doubt in Moses' mind. But do you know what he said to Korach? He says, you know, Korach, you might be right. Let's test it. We will take your rod and Aaron's rod and place it in the tabernacle and let's see what happens. Was he out of his mind? After all, Korach was the embodiment of Satan. How could Moses do that? And even more so, we all know that Moses was right, and Moses knew that he was right. And yet, have we not learned that the mere fact that a person is right does not necessarily connect them to the light force? To be connected to the life force, sometimes you have to let go. Listen to what the other person is saying. And this applies even to the case where you're absolutely right and the other person is absolutely wrong. And so Moses, at that time, he just gave in. He allowed the light to determine what had to be fixed. And we learned that if you want to be positive and not fall into the negativity, then you should never say that the light is going to punish you. God's going to punish you. If you sit and think in this manner, you're already connecting to negativity. You should not think in that manner for your own sake, because it's you who will be disconnected from the light. So for your sake, you don't want to think in that manner. And we also know that the source of all disease is disunity. If it's cancer, AIDS, heart attack, anything, it's all disunity. It's a disharmony. It's a dis-ease in the body. It's a disunity with my friends. It's a disunity, a disharmony with my business, with my children, with my wife. Disunity with anyone. Abraham Lincoln knew it. We know it. And united we stand. Divided we fall. Nothing can be held together when there's no unity. And therefore, the moment you're willing to give in, even though you know you are right, then the whole picture changes. But if there is a constant disunity between ourselves and others, it will eventually manifest itself on a physical level in our bodies. And then it will manifest itself in a way that the whole body will not function as one. You see, when you have a cut in your finger or any problem in your body, there's an immediate flow of unity. All the white cells unite and they release a power called the immune system, and they all go to the affected area to heal it. And if the body is in balance, then the body's inflammation superhighway cures itself. However, if the body is out of that whack, it's not in balance, then you have problems because the unity in the body is off balance. It was the Kohen who was able to see in the body where there was a disconnection in this superhighway. He could see it. He had this instinct. He was aware where the light stopped and would inject right in that place the power of Chesed. And that's why the Torah states that the Kohen looked at the leprosy and was able to determine by its color whether it was leprous or not. And the Torah is not speaking about a skin disease. What the Kohen was doing was looking into the body to determine where there was a disunity so that he could inject the power of Chesed so that it would bring unity and connect once again with those areas which were disconnected from the light. That's the manner the disease would, in that manner the disease would disappear. And in this manner the body's information superhighway would once again work. Healing would take place, and that's what the Kohen could do, and that's what Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, our teacher, could not do. Because Moshe was not Chesed. He was even higher. He was what they called in between. He was Dat. It's not even on the list. It's right before, in the Keter Chochmah Bina, it's before Chesed, a little higher, and underneath, yes. And only Chesed has the power of unity that is required for healing. And that's the power of the Mem, and that's what the Mem represents. So now we know that we use the term Melech HaMashiach. What does that mean? The King Messiah? How is King related to Mashiach? How is King related to unity? How is King related to completeness and to wholeness and to totality? Now we know that kings are connected to Malchut. They're connected to physicality, to the physical world. Melech and Malchut are the same word. Melech means king, Malchut means kingdom. Malchut is the manifestation of things. When we speak of things being done, we're referring to Malchut. When we talk about thinking about things in its potentiality, in its total potentiality, then we're talking about Keter. When we think about something that something might or might not become manifested, but when you actually begin doing something, you bring that something into the physical realm, you manifest it. Kings have the power to change history. That's the power of a king. You see, if we say a blessing, when in the presence of a king, it must mean something. And so when we're saying that God gave some of his honor to kings, it must mean more than that. And the fact that I'm supposed to say a blessing in the presence of a king, it must mean that there is something here with which I'm supposed to connect. Every blessing is a combination of letters and words that have been put together to allow me to have access to spiritual energy that I cannot grasp with my hands, which are physical. And when we speak about a king, therefore, we should understand that we are not in the presence of a regular human being. That's why the blessing states that God has given of his honor to this person. It's not a regular person. You might say, that's not fair. Well, that's too bad. After all, he's born just like you and me, you and I. That's true. But at the same time, a king is a channel. And that's the difference. Like Moses, who was a pure channel. Or the respect for a rabbi. The point is that when one gives another person respect, it shows that he wants to connect to his energy. And he wants to receive part of that energy. And that's why we're told to serve our teachers and our rabbis. And that there is more value in that than even sitting and studying with them. And so when we say that blessing, we're saying to the person who was chosen by other people to be a king, and because other people chose him, he's now a better channel than the other people? No. First, we should also understand that not every king is a real king. A king is a real king when he fulfills those requirements as defined by the Torah. It was a person who had the power of a king. And I'm not even saying that there are no real kings today. There might be. But what is the real power of a king? He might not even be called a king. You know, the power of a king is the power to be able to change things in this physical world. What do I mean? Things that have already been determined in the spiritual world. And a real king can change that. A real king can make a difference. It's the connection on some level between the light and the vessel, the spiritual and the physical. We have an example of this with King Saul and the prophet Samuel. Samuel told King Saul as he was about to go to war with Amalek, go and kill the men, women, and children, the cattle and the sheep. Don't you dare take any body or spoils of war. Destroy it all. And don't forget the king to kill King Agag of Amalek. And so he goes to war and he's victorious. And when Samuel comes at the end of the battle, he sees cattle. He sees the king alive. And when Samuel asks King Saul about this, he responds, he fulfilled the word of God. And now how could Saul say that he fulfilled the word of God? He clearly violated the prophecy. The prophecy said that God wanted King Agag killed, and he didn't do it. Now Samuel was the prophet. He knew what he knew. But King Saul could also see what Samuel saw. And what the King Saul saw was that God wanted the holiday of Purim to exist, says the Zohar, says the Kabbalah. And the only way Purim could exist is if Haman would be born, Haman. And if Haman would not have been born, there would never have been a Purim. Haman is the descendant of Agag. And on that night, when he kept Agag in prison, he had sexual relationship with someone. And from that union, many years later, we get Haman. And that's why Haman is called Haman Ha'agagi. He was a descendant of King Agag. That's a legend, by the way, you know. And therefore, when King Saul said, I did what God wanted me to do, he was right. God wanted Purim to exist. It's a nice, nice story. But where did he make a mistake that was resulted in Saul's clothing to be torn and the prophecy that Saul's kingdom would be torn, that he would be removed? That was the mistake. So what was the big sin that Saul committed that he was resulted with the throne no longer descending from him? You see, Saul could have changed his cassette. He could have made it that there would be no Purim. He could have ended the negativity right then and there. He could have finished the negativity in the world, but he didn't do it. That was his mistake. So here is an example of how a king determines history, changes history, doesn't change history, could change history, but didn't. Now, we should understand that there is really no reason why the Mem was not used to create the world. Because after all, it's all about balance. It's all about connection. It's all about positivity. Even thought. Pure thought. There's a word which begins with M. Mem. Machshava. And there's also death, however. Mavet. But it's only an end. It's also a beginning. Mavet. It's a kind of a middle point. Just like the Mem is the middle point in the alphabet. So too is death the middle point between this life and the next. Death is the end of the illusion, beginning of the real life, the spiritual life. And the real reason people die is to get to their tikkun, their correction. And the real reason for dying is that you have finally achieved total harmony. So therefore, the Mem is not merely a channel like the other letters, but it is also a ma'atzil, an emanator. It has within it the inclusiveness of light and vessel together. It is a cause. So then why wasn't the world created with the Mem? And also we know that we really can bring the correction to the whole world through the Mem. So then why wasn't it used to create the world? You can cancel out the klipah, the veil, the husks. You can bring Mashiach. The Mem not only teaches us how to bring the light, it also teaches us how to manifest the light. So why couldn't it be used? And the reason it was not used was not because there was some lack within it, but just the opposite. It represented completeness. And just like a king who doesn't do the kind of work that one of his subjects does, and just as you relate differently to a king, so too the Mem is not connected to the physical so much as to the completeness of everything. It is Malchut, and it is connected to manifesting things, being able to change the cassette, but not to the illusion, because the Mem is not the illusion. Yes, it is somehow above all the letters and different from all the other letters because it doesn't have the mud aspect to it that we all experience. The mud is all the bad things that happen to us. So the Mem is the manifestation without the mud.